Welcome to Paddling Adventures Radio. I'm Sean Rowley, and with me is not Derek Specht. It is Kevin Callan. How you doing, Kevin?
Oh, I knew if I came back from the wilderness, I'd have to do something with you.
Right?
I should stay back in the woods. I would have been fine.
Well, Derek's out in the woods. That's why you're here.
Really? Where is he?
BC.
Oh, he must be stuck in there.
He is.
What was I thinking? Oh, the BC is burning. Let's go on a canoe trip.
Well, in his defense, they got there, or he got there, and they're getting all ready to go. He had his meals all prepared, so they, you know, do them over the fire. And the day before they were supposed to start, fire ban. Your luck rubs off on him.
Oh, he's his own person, but
right?
Yeah, I do have bad luck for that.
So how you doing, Kevin?
I'm good, actually. I'm really good. I calculated 31 nights in a tent so far.
Okay.
And I only peed on the floor once by accident and spilled my whiskey 5 times by accident. So that's pretty good if you do the math.
It depends if you prefer to pee on the floor or save your whiskey.
Well, yeah, but here's the thing about the pee thing. I don't use a pee bottle. My buddy Andy always has for that I remember. And I said, well, that's just not manly. It's kind of weird that someone leans over you and pees in a jug over your head while you're half asleep. So I would always go outside and swat the bugs and stuff. Mm-hmm. And then go off on these incredible journeys I just did, back to back trip. I thought, well, I might want to just, you know, pee in. And so I got this Nalgene bottled, this mini one, not a large one, mini one. And my partner, Christine, I thought that she gave it to me, but she said, no, I don't recall that at all, giving you that. But anyways, nice purple color one, perfect size. And I went and I thought, I'm going to try this. Because why would I go out in a storm? It was really bad storm. And I went to try it, and I missed and soaked my entire shirt with urine and the bottom of the tent. I got maybe a couple of dribbles in the Nalgene. And I thought, okay, well, that's stupid, Kevin. Just don't ever use that again. But kept it in my pack. And that's a story that maybe come later. But if you think about it, okay, we really need to get to this whiskey spillage thing, because I'm not making any of this up. I will make up stories. I'm Irish. I'm Scottish. No, I won't make up stories. I'll exaggerate stories.
Right.
So I'll never make up stories. But this is not an exaggeration. So throughout my years of experience in the wilderness, I, for some reason, has spilled whiskey in my pack, my barrel, throughout the years. And my buddies have said, what is wrong with you? I don't know. So this year, a new energy. Okay, here we go off. I'm going to Petawawa. I got a job in Petawawa for Petawawa Tourism. And they said, okay, we're going to promote all the great things you can do in the outdoors in Petawawa. I went, great. So I'm going to go and camp at Lexac, a campsite in Algonquin. And I'll do a walk-in site. And I'll stay there for the night and then meet you guys through the day. So we did the Lower Barron Canyon River or Barron, mm-hmm. Lower Barron River. We did that. It was amazing, actually. Incredible. And then we did a whole bunch of islands out by the Ottawa River, which is really incredible. But when we did that for the day, I would go back to my site. And I was exhausted because I'm getting old. And, the first night, though, so exhausted. I thought, well, you know, the bugs are bad. The storm's coming. I'm just going to get a wee bit of whiskey in my cup. And then bring the flask in, the platypus flask in, and just, you know, maybe read a book and just relax, because the next day I have a really big day. So I go in there and drink nothing, completely fall asleep. I'm exhausted. Midnight, I wake up. What's going on? And I had spilled the whole cup of whiskey in my hat, and also the flask had fallen over with the cap off and spilled all over my tent.
Why would you not put the flask lid back on?
Because I was tired, okay? You weren't there. You were you, okay? I was really tired. And so the next day I went off to Great Adventures to work with the Petawa Tourism. And, oh, great. And then I realized, well, I need some whiskey, but I was in town, so I'm going to get a bottle of scotch. And I got the cheapest, like J&B. I don't know if you know your scotch, but J&B. And I go, it doesn't matter right now. The bugs are bad, and it's going to storm again tonight, so I got a bottle of J&B. But I get to the parking lot of the walk-in site, and I realize, oh, geez, Kevin, like once you walk in, you're now in Algonquin Park, and you're not allowed a bottle. So being very... you know, ethical, mm-hmm. I decided to open the J&B bottle and pour it into my platypus. And you have to be there to witness this. It just chinged a rock. Like, not hit a rock, just chinged the rock. And the full bottom of the J&B bottle flushed into the ground. A bunch of ants got drunk as hell. And I went, are you kidding me? So I went back and I was fine. I had green tea mint tea is what I have. I had mint tea. I was fine. And then I went off and did more work for them with no scotch. And then I moved on to Sembleton-Champlain to do an incredible story about Sembleton-Champlain Park. They had got a massive storm last year, and you have to go there just to witness the amount of trees, like mm-hmm. thousands and thousands and thousands, like pick up sticks everywhere. And Josie from Mattawa, she's a writer there, and she joined me. We spent the night camping at the campground that they just opened just a few sites because they have to keep going. But I wanted to show the rejuvenation they had done in the park, and that was really cool. And, of course, we get in the bug shelter. It was really buggy, and, of course, she's not a drinker, so not a drinker. I'm not going to drink in front of you, so I didn't have anything there. And I'm driving home. I went, my life is hell. Then I move on. To Quetico. And so I drove 2.5 days to Quetico. A couple of things happened there. I stop at Schutz Provincial Park the first night, mm-hmm. forgetting how far Kingston is away from everything in the world. And I only get to Schutz, and it was really late at night, really late. And my neighbors beside me, they're arguing, and their son, I'm assuming their son, got a big bong in his hand, and he's puking all over the campsite. And my other neighbor's stealing my electricity off my electrical site, but I have a tent, so I don't really care. And the other neighbor's got a generator going. I went, my life is really hell. And I decided, because of depression, not to have any scotch. So I move on to Rainbow Falls and stay there for the night. And I had a weird sight that everybody would debate about. That social media video I did of that site. No, was that Rainbow Falls? No, that was Kakabaka. We'll get to Kakabaka. No, Rainbow Falls. Actually, you know what? Nothing actually happened in Rainbow Falls.
Rainbow Falls was a good place.
It was good. And I moved on to actually then to Dawson Lake Campground. So I spent the night there before I went off to Quetico Interior, which was lovely, except they got a campsite right beside the fish cleaning station. And I went, no, this is why this is not taken. Because trying to get a campsite in any provincial park right now, it's like, well, I got one. Look at this. It's exciting. I got one. And why? It's right beside the fish cleaning station. So there, Christine had got me a brand new camp chair to use at the campsite. So here's the thing: for logistics, I was traveling a lot, trying to save money by staying at campgrounds instead mm-hmm. of motels, and then I would keep my backcountry pack together and not use that. So I would have a separate tent for the campground and have a separate cooking set. And also a separate chair, which is a very lovely chair from Walmart that was on sale. And it was black. And I remember her coming back with this. I went, it's black. Why would you get a black? Well, why not? I went, why would you use a black chair at campground? Like, bugs are attracted to it. Like, why? Well, it was on more sale. No, I just thought it would be better than pink. I went, I'd be fine with pink. So sure enough, in the morning, I wake up, in a haze, and I had no glasses on. I look out, and there's the black chair right beside me in the tent. Not right beside me, but right outside the vestibule. And it looked like a black bear.
Next, if you have no glasses on, fish cleaning station.
Fish cleaning station, no glasses on, looking out you know, a black chair that's like, with arms above, you know, I'm thinking, well, that's a black bear. And so that was a bit of a spook. But then I moved on and I got in the canoe and I went off into the backcountry. And the idea was to actually go and meet amazing people, Quetico Foundation people. So they, Quetico Foundation has been around since 1954. Mm-hmm. And they've been, they're a watchdog. They're not friends of Quetico. They're not right. friends of Klein. They're not friends of Algonquin. They're the Quetico Foundation. So they can say whatever they want to say about what they think the park is doing. Which I kind of love. I'm not knocking parks, whatever, but I the friends of can't say, oh, what the hell? What the hell?
Right.
We're can. So they hire a bunch of university students for the summer, and they go and monitor data so they find out what's going on with the lakes. Is there any pollutants? Is there any changes? Is there any change in diversity? So when years later, when it goes to court saying, well, you know, this is happening and we didn't know, they can say, well, you did know because right. we have monitored this for many years and actually we're the watchdogs and we actually told you this was happening, which is happening now, by the way, and I'm not going to get into politics, but it's happening now. And they were monitoring the lakes for pollutants and we won't get into why, but, you know, look at the news, what's going on right now with Quetico.
I was watching your videos there, and the contraptions they had to go down and get the samples of the water and stuff like that, and even the gadget, I know the one gadget she was dropping with the probes in it down to get the same, to make the, basically they're getting a manual and a digital sample to make sure that, and if they're the same, then you know that's exactly what's happening down there. Right.
Well, they really deserve any award Canada can give them for what they did. Could you imagine doing a canoe trip and you're complaining about your pack and how heavy it is? They add on a Sikki disc, which is mm-hmm. a piece of metal. They also add on nets that they put in for spiny flea.
Yeah.
And all these others. But to do that, they have to weight it down with a rock. And then they decide, because they don't want to contaminate, they every lake they go to, they have to choose a different rock. And then they put the rock. I'm looking at the weight of their packs compared to, well, added on to just our own gear. Good on you. And right. and they were so enthusiastic. And I got to say, what happened with that was, it was sort of magical. Because I was, because of schedules and stuff, they said, well, we really can't meet you until Thursday, but we'll spend the night with you. And I went, okay, I'd rather do a whole 7-day trip with you, but that's fine. We'll make it work. And I go, but I'm there already, so I might as well go and do a trip on my own. And then I get, if you know about it, Dawson Lake, French River, and then you get into Pickerel. Mm-hmm. The very first magical campsite is called the Pines. Old growth pines, 350 years old. Huge sand beach, and I see this massive storm coming, and I've only paddled for 2 hours, and I thought, well, I'm, you know, my whole plan was to circumnavigate Pickerel or do other things too. I'm all excited, like the thoroughbred going out of the gate for a big ride. And I go, Kevin, be smart, don't do this. And that was the big storm that hit. It hit you guys too, like all those trees toppled everywhere. It was massive. And I heard it and saw it and felt it. And then it hit again the next night again. It was all in the news, I found out later. Massive storms. And then I got stuck on the beach. And I'm waiting for them. And then the next time, I could have maybe gone somewhere. But I'm thinking, well, I'm meeting them here anyway the next night. So I read another book, another Sigurd Olsen book. Listening Point was fantastic. And I think something was going on with my life at that time. I'm thinking the nature was saying, calm down, like relax. You are allowed to be windbound. You're solo. And then they came into sight in the campsite. And they were really nervous to meet me at first and really nervous to actually do the interview. But it was good night that we spent the night together and that they made good meals. And I got some really good interviews with them. And they talked passion they had with Quetico, the passion why we were there, because obviously they weren't there for making money. Like if you were a research student from university working for Quidditch Foundation. I don't know how much they made, but I can't see it being a lot of money.
It wasn't six figures. Four figures, three figures.
Oh, no. But they were all to do, they wanted not to change the role, but they wanted to make a difference. And then also progress in life as well. It was a good job for that. Had a lovely time with them. It was incredible. Felt really good about the world when I left. I left at 4:30 in the morning from that campsite because I go, I got to go because I got to do a Lake Superior trip in a Voyager canoe soon. And I've been windbound here forever, so I'm going nuts. And I head off. It was the most beautiful morning. Got lost, by the way. Well, not lost. Confused my whereabouts in some weedy bay.
You took the scenic route.
I took the scenic route. It was very, very misty, very foggy. And I thought, yeah, this is the river. No. But by doing that, I saw a moose and its calf.
Mm-hmm.
I saw swans with babies. I saw otters. And I would never have found that if I didn't get lost or confused with my whereabouts. And then I got to the Dawson Lake campground in a foggy mist, sort of a haze. I went, oh, no, this is not fog. This is fire.
Right.
So if you go back in time, I left. I drove off, went to Kakabaka, camped there. And by the way, that's what that happened, where I camped at the one site that was so small, I actually had to put my tent right beside my vehicle. But that was fine. I could care less about that at that point. But the fire hit, and that started the big fire in Quantico, and they closed Quantico and Bender Waters after that. It was a massive fire.
Right.
So I got out of there in good time. The crew actually had to get evacuated. Oh. I don't know if they were rescued. It says they were rescued, but they were evacuated. And Dawson Lake Campground was evacuated. And I'm talking a few hours after I booted down the road.
Well, with social media and seeing all the fires through Boundary Waters and all the video coming out, like, I think people are getting more aware of how fast fires go. Like, you see smoke way across the hill. Next thing you know, it's right across the lake from you, covering, you know, as far as you can see.
Yeah, and you hear stories this year about people. That story, incredible story about the canoe group in Wabakimi
that
got stuck. Yeah. And they saw it there. And it's the smoke that gets you,
not
the fire. And fire is a part of life in the wilderness, it, especially in Quetico. It needs to burn the balsam to get rid of the wheat tree to help the pine out. And, you know, even the research team I was with was talking about that the night before I left. And that's a given. But to be in that environment when that happened. The other thing, I did a rant on that video, and people have commented a lot on that rant. Because I was solo, maybe, and I was reading a lot about Sigurd Olsen, Eric Morris, of a philosophy of life, Peter Singer, Rachel Carson, they all warned us, like, here's the thing. I finally looked at the camera and I said, if you don't believe in global warming, you're a beep, beep, beep idiot. Right?
Yep.
And I go, if you don't believe it, I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that. But if you don't think that there's something changing right now, so let's say, forget about global warming. If you don't think something is changing on this earth right now, Gaia is coming down and squashing us like a bug. I'm telling you right now.
There's too many things going on.
Yeah. So whether it's global warming or not, and you can argue that to the ends of the earth, right? I am going to be 63 years old now, and I spend at least 60 nights in the bush since I don't remember, right?
Yep.
And I don't remember storms. I remember storms, but I don't remember storms all the friggin' time. No, you get windbound all the time. You've got extreme heat to the point that you get heat exhaustion and vomit. So, you know, I hope to God it squashes us like a bug because we deserve it.
Well, you know what? Like, we talk about things like this, and my opinion is, if you don't want to call it climate change or global warming, whatever, but something is going on. Things are changing. And yeah, I remember storms when I first started my canoe tripping career. Nothing like what we're getting now. I remember, oh yeah, you're going against a headwind, but not every trip, you know, and now it's just like, yeah, windbound for a couple of days. And yeah, we went around and we couldn't get on that lake because the wind was just so ferocious. Now you've got to go from 7 in the morning till noon, because once noon hit, it's like clockwork. The winds pick up and stuff. It's become a different conversation about the things happen on canoe trips and stuff like that. So it's out there. It's happening.
Yeah, it is happening, and whether people want to talk about it or not, I got to the point in my life, I don't care. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to get out of the bush more than ever to experience it. I'm worried about my daughter.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, she's 23 years old, and she's, like, blaming us, and for good reason. But at the same time, then I moved on for that, and oh, I got a motel in Scriber.
Really?
Yeah, I did my laundry.
There's nothing in Scriber.
There's a laundromat and a motel at the same place and a restaurant all together as one. And I got to know the staff really well. And in fact, they're all canoeists. And one, actually, I even signed one of my books to her. She's all excited. I love my time in the North, but I also spent time visiting people in the North that I haven't visited for a while. So I visited Kevin Ride.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I saw you met up with him.
Yeah, I love the guy. And, you know, he's not doing YouTube for a while, but he'll get back to it. There's things in his family that's going on, that, mm-hmm. Personal stuff, but he'll get back into it. And in Bill Ostrom at the sauna. There's a sauna in... Right. Thunder Bay, we had breakfast there. And Barb from Ontario Parks, park manager, and Chris, the interior park warden for Quetico. I all met with them and had a lovely time with them. That's the North to me, like the people, right? Yeah. To be quite, well, I love the wilderness, that's a given, but it's the people. But to do and talk to them through social media for so many years, and all of a sudden, hey, you know what? I have time because I'm doing my laundry in Scriber. I'm going to go have coffee with these people.
Why don't you come over here to the laundromat while I'm washing my skivvies? Bring some coffees with you.
Oh, yeah. And every night I had lake trout from Lake Ontario caught fresh. But then I moved on to National Superior Adventures.
Well, hang on. I got questions. Oh, you're just rip-roaring ready to go to all these different lakes now, aren't you? I have questions. First off, I got to say, and you've talked about it a couple times, is I never thought about the car camp gear on your way to a canoe trip. So all your stuff is – it makes sense when you say it out loud.
In fact, my car has sort of a barrier in the back of backcountry gear. Never touch it until we get the backcountry, because I know what's in it. I don't want to open that pack, because then you'll forget something, right? If you open that pack and then use it. So I have, here's for Rainbow Falls and Chutes and Quebec, whatever. I use separate tent and it's separate cook set, separate food,
good
separate
idea.
Chair that looks like a bear.
it's a bear chair.
Yeah.
You talked about poplar leaves flipping, and now see, I used to hear that all the time as a kid growing up. Oh yeah, when the leaves start curling, rain's on its way, or when they start flipping over, it's on the rain's on the way. And not many people talk about that, and it's weird. Over the last few years, same with the woolly caterpillars, the ones that are what, yellow and black, depending on the size of each section is how bad the winter's going to be. And the beehives, depending on are they really high, is going to be a lot of snow. If it's really low. And all these scenes have been coming back over the last few years. And then you're talking about the poplar leaves shaking and whatnot.
Yeah, so the caterpillar thing may or may not work. The beehive may or may not work. But I can guarantee you 100% or plus that the trembling aspen or all other poplars and birch will flip and show their underbellies. And it makes logical sense. Trembling aspen has a very loose petiole. Mm-hmm. So the stem between the leaf bottom to the branch is very loose. And so it flips when the barometer changes. So that's the whole thing. So when the barometer changes, they flip. But the trembling aspen has a really white underbelly.
Right.
So you'll see the under white belly. And I guarantee you, of my experience, if it is only halfway up a tree, it's only going to rain for a couple of hours. But if it is up the entire tree, it's going to rain for a couple of days. And you can just see it. As soon as you can feel it. You can feel, if you're old, you can feel it in your bones.
I can feel it in my bones.
Yeah, the arthritis. The whole barometer changes, and you can feel the breeze coming. There's a heat wave all of a sudden. Oh, no, there's no heat wave. Something's going on. Look at the trees, but look at the entire trembling aspen.
Right.
It's called trembling aspen because it trembles in the wind. Balsam poplar does the same. Large tooth aspen does the same, even more so. But the reason why trembling aspen, you can see the bottom of it because it has a white underbelly. Birch does the same too. Willow, if you're around southern Ontario, does the same. You don't have to look at the leaves. You know something's happening. You can feel it in your own self.
So just on another thing, I'll be outside and I'm just like sniffing and I'm like, rain's coming. And people look at me. Am I the only one that can smell rain coming?
No, you can. So all your senses are knowing that, again, the barometer is changing and you can smell rain and the air has become cool. So, and your skin can feel the coolness as well. Senses are really incredible. It's like, I have a really incredible sense of smell, which sometimes I despise because I went to pick the dog's vomit or not vomit, but poop up the other day and oh my God, I want to vomit. But we were on Lake Superior, and whitefish came around us and started slurping up bugs, probably mayflies, or maybe not. But I can smell the fish because they're coming up slurping. And the one person beside me in the boat was, you can't smell that. I went, well, I can. It's just me. I can smell that stuff. I can smell fish coming. And if you've ever on a trout stream and gone to a trout hole, and you can feel, you literally can smell the fish in the hole.
Mm-hmm. That and... so like if I'm walking through the neighborhood, I can smell somebody barbecuing from a mile away, but, hearing little things, I'm like, shh, listen, can you hear that? And it, like, even the small, like buzzes and stuff like that. And people are like, hear what? And then all of a sudden, like 5 minutes later, oh, I can hear that now. And I'm thinking, yeah, I must just be ignoring my wife.
Oh my God.
But no, just hearing things from far away. Like, I'm sure I heard loons, and no one else is hearing loons. And then 5 minutes later, loons.
Yeah, so your senses are more towards hearing than smell. But I also know hearing things, too. If blue jays are going nuts in the bush, or cardinals, or chickadees especially, then a storm's coming. Because they do a feeding frenzy. And they're like, we know a storm's coming, so we're going to eat as much as possible before we hunker up.
Right.
And that's bush time. I sound like an old geezer for heaven's sakes. But when I hear those things, that are like, Kevin, what's going on? Well, the storm's coming. Even on the workshop on Saturday at Front Line Outfitters, we knew a storm's coming. The weather told us it was, so we didn't need all that. But when it was coming, so we're on the water, and I went, guys, we need to get off the water because the storm's coming. Well, how do you know? Did you check your phone? No. I don't need to check my phone right now. I'm telling you right now. And boom, it hit. Like, it was nasty.
Yeah. It's just these little things. And talking about getting old, now we're at the point where we're going, I remember back in 19... Wait, you were alive in the 1900s? Dang, you're old. You said that when you get back from trips... People gather around you and want to hear stories about your trips, and they feed off of that. And that proves that being out there is a positive experience.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Well, you said it.
Okay.
No, wait, I said it.
They do, actually, and I'm the last one to think about all that. I just do what I do. I talked about this before to you, but I do what I do, and I don't really have a – I don't go into saying I hope I changed someone's life. I just – well, I hope I do. But actually, it was refreshing for me to be away in the bush so much, half the time on my own, which I got to say sometimes is pretty lonely. Traveling, I wouldn't say in the bush I'm lonely, but traveling is pretty lonely. But then meeting other people, and also, can you imagine going on a Lake Superior trip with 14 people, well, 13 people and myself in a Voyager canoe, and asking them, why are you here? Right?
Right.
And some of them will say, well, I always wanted to meet you and stuff, but that's very minimal, which I think that's really refreshing. But they want to experience Lake Superior, or they saw what people experienced last year in the Voyager canoe, and they want to experience the same thing. Well, what was that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was the community in that canoe, the fun that you had, the relaxation you had, the non-afraid of wilderness you had, the also the mystic of Lake Superior, being afraid of Lake Superior and putting a tobacco in the water, hope you didn't die the next day, and make you feel alive because of that. And that's incredible. But the one this year was just incredible because everybody had great reasons, but was Jane. So it was odd numbers. Everybody was in couples. And they added actually one more person to the boat by accident, so that we were a full boat.
Right.
And so there was one seat in the back that was like this. It was the size of, well,
a toilet seat.
Yeah, it was a small butt seat. So I said to Jane, I went, well, you're on your own. You want to be with me in the back. And I like being in the back so I can film it first, and then we'll switch. And she goes, yeah. And I didn't know her. And so we went around the circle again, why you want to be there. And they gave me all the reasons. And it came to her, and she was the last one, I think. And she said, well, my husband, Tim, wanted to be on a trip like this. And he's passed away. I went, ooh. And everybody's like, ooh. And so I'm going to do this trip to be with him in spirit.
Right.
Wow. And that's like, you don't want to have a tear after that. Because, Mystic Lake Superior, being in the woods, being with people, getting away from your phone, those are incredible reasons. But for her reasons, that's just one. not to say you should win, but she won. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. So I'm on the trip with her, had a lovely time, and she was fantastic, because every time I said something, she goes, oh, well, yeah, just shut up, my God, you've got stories for
it. See, you're she was the one amazing. That talks all the time.
Oh, no, I loved every time with her, because she just threw it right back to me. I don't know. I just love telling her, oh, another story. And so the one night, every night we would go around the fire and say, okay, what was the best part of your day? And it was a great time. Like, again, beautiful sunsets, beautiful sunrises. Waves were incredible, made me terrified, but alive. And she said, well, a butterfly landed on my pack, and that was my husband. And I went, ooh, well, that's spiritual. And she goes, yeah, it was. And I know he's with me.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm not making this crap up. Every day, that orange butterfly, it probably was not the same butterfly. It was the same species. Landed on her pack. And I've got to say, after that trip, I would do that in a heartbeat with her.
Right.
That was incredible. Because Lake Superior is so mystical, it proved that day that changed her life. It gave her incentive. Now, what's really cool is on Sunday, on my workshop at Frontenac Outfitters, Jeanette, I think her name was Jeanette, she arrived, and I went over to everybody, why you're here, and blah, blah, blah. And she goes, I want to be on that trip next year, and I need to get in shape and know how to paddle before I'm on that trip. I went, that's why you're here in my workshop? Yes. Why? Same reason. Her life had changed, and she wanted Lake Superior to rejuvenate her.
So if you go through all my notes here I sent you earlier,
down
near the bottom... Might as well jump into it right now. I'm good with it. What, in your opinion, is so alluring about Lake Superior? Why are people drawn to it? You know, I have a disagreement with Superior all the time. I've only been able to paddle on it once out of like 40 times. But what is it about Lake Superior that draws people? I mean, we drive the route around it and just in absolute awe of the scenery and stuff, but what's more to it than that?
You're not in control at all, and we need to be remembered of that for nature. Not at all. Nature mm-hmm. has full control of us out there, and the proof of the pudding is we had really incredible weather, better than we did last year, and One of the guides, Oscar, 19-year-old kid, he even said on camera, and he goes, "You think you're comfortable until it hits. And then you realize you have no control." And we got windbound. You imagine this. We had relatively good weather most of the time. I mean, there were some big waves. But our last day out, you think about it, our last day out, we're going to go to the lodge. And we got up, and we headed out. I'll never forget this moment in my life. We're heading out to the point, and everybody's like, okay, that's pretty rough out there. And it was calm in the bay, but it was Brulé Harbor. And, you know, we had already passed Old Woman Bay, and we're going to go to Michipigaten, and everybody's all excited. Like, for good reason. You've been in the bush for a long time, and, you know, it's time to go home and experience life back home. And it wouldn't let us. But I remember that moment where the 19-year-old kid that was freaking awesome. This kid was amazing.
Except that he didn't share his Oreos.
Wouldn't Joe, the little bugger.
Not so amazing now, is he?
Oh, I respected him for that, actually, to be quite honest. I'm going to say right now, I respect him for that. And we all teased him, but he worked his buns off on that trip. Him and Oliver never stopped working. So if you want to keep Oreos to yourself, I'm good with that. But I'm still going to tease the living crap out of you for not having... we had a big snack pack behind us. We ate really well. But those guides never stopped. Hats off to them. They were incredible. Angels for sure. But there was a moment, imagine a moment, where we were getting into the waves bigger than we would usually have. And everybody kind of says, well, yeah, but we just have to go around the point and then take the tailwind back home. And then Oscar looked at Oliver way in the back, and Oliver was the main guy, and he's very calm, cool, very type A personality. And Oscar goes, nope. That's all he did. Nope. And then Oliver goes, nope, we're turning back. And that was experience. Even though he was 19 years old, he knew Lake Superior was saying, not today, boys.
Yeah.
Not today.
Yeah. No, you know what? And that's good on them for knowing that little, you know, like the more experienced guy looking at the younger guy going, saying nope and thinking, okay, you know, then he says nope, I'm trusting his judgment and we're going back.
Yeah. And there was no macho, we can do this and we can conquer nature. That doesn't happen on Lake Superior. It will kill you. So we went up to another bay. That was hilarious. We went to another bay. And it was calm. Look at the video. It was pretty calm where we are. Everybody's like, "What the? You know, you were windbound." No, we weren't windbound. We were worried, but there was a little beach, and we stood there for a good 2 or 3 hours because we couldn't do anything. And I thought everybody was going to go loopy because we were supposed to go home that day,
right?
And I really thought people were going to lose it. Like you got a lot of conflict going in that boat. Conflict analysis. Going on that boat, different characters of why they're out there and why. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I asked them all and they're like, we get it. We've been out 6 days in Superior. We understand Superior and nature is in control here and we're not. I went, that's freaking awesome that they got, all of them got that.
Right.
There wasn't one person saying, I'm out of here. I'm running to the bush. Oh, I'm going to the road. And then what's really, we had to go back to our original campsite too. And we had a siesta. And then at 3:30, we made the call saying, we can't make Michipigaten, but we can go back to Old Woman Bay probably. And so, okay, let's go for that. And we started heading back and it was pretty rough. Like the film doesn't do it justice, but the one moment where Oliver actually in the back, Oliver and Oscar were in the back because they said, we have to surf the waves now. So we need two paddlers in the back to steer it. It's really hard to steer that boat. Mm-hmm. It's very safe boat to be out, far safer than a kayak or a canoe, but it's really hard to steer. And then everybody has to paddle in sync. Like nobody can be lazy. Everybody has to paddle. And if you don't paddle, you're swatting in the head.
So right? That's why there's no video of that, right?
Oh, and there's me filming, and I for good reason they really mock me a lot. But then now they're thanking me because we get what you're doing, Kevin. You weren't paddling a lot because you're filming, but now we love the film, right?
So, right.
But ended up. Oliver, very like type A again, said, okay, let's everybody know we're getting approaching Old Woman Bay, but there's a section here where you will not see land because of the fog and mist. And we're talking swells, not just calm. We're talking swells and bailing the water off your lap, right? And you won't see the land for about, you know, 27 minutes. Any time to 27 minutes. And we're doing a compass bearing of, I think it was 176. And he used a compass, not a GPS.
Right. Good.
And he's a young kid, right? Not a young kid. Mature young person. Used a compass heading. And you can just feel the anxiety. And then feel also the mystic of it all. It's like, this is an environment that's so magical that we're nothing on this planet. We are, squash the bug, right?
Yep.
And we're floating, and then all of a sudden we see the beach, and then all of a sudden all these people on the beach see us, and they're like, Voyager canoe just came out of the mist. And then we get there and realize it was probably the best place to finish that trip because it actually was where Bill Mason's memorial is in that parking lot.
Right.
And all those people really, the previous year we had gone to Denison Falls to go where Bill Mason had painted. So it was kind of more meaningful for us to end that trip. But to move that boat and watch that video, and I got tons of B-roll of it, move that big bloody boat up the beach through the rocks to the parking lot, that took us a long time. I did a really short clip of that, but yeah, but they all work together. You watch them, they all work together, and they should have been beat at that time because it was like, you know, getting close to 5, and it was 5:30, and they still had to get shuttled back to the lodge and then figure out how to get home.
That's all the adrenaline.
Yeah, none of them were sort of like, I'm done. Well, Jane did say something really funny, and she did it as a joke. And, you know, she's hauling this freaking huge Voyager canoe over what we call the bananas, and afterwards we called them penises. Anyway, and she goes, I know I paid for this trip. My God.
You paid for the opportunity to work like a dog.
and she agreed. I said, well, you did pay for the experience. She goes, exactly.
Yep.
That's what I paid for. I didn't pay for some rich resort to sit on the beach all day. She wanted that experience. And, you know, I talked to four of them afterwards, and they're going through a lot right now. They're having a difficult time now being normal. Because it was such a great adventure, they went home and said, I'm having issues because we had such a great experience on that. I don't want to do with my life right now.
Normal's overrated.
Yeah.
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 So going through all them big waves, would you rather be in a big Voyager canoe with 13 other people or your prospector 16 footer with one other person?
Voyager canoe for sure. It's you're not going to flip that boat. You might fill it up with water. You're not going to flip it. You think so, but it's pretty safe to be going out in that boat. And a kayak. We met a lot of kayakers. I'd rather be in a kayak than a canoe.
Mm-hmm.
But with a canoe, you'd have to be a lot slower and think a lot more of where you're going.
Right.
Yeah. So I would do all three of them. The only thing about the Voyager canoe, if you ever did flip it, I don't know how you would get over.
You wouldn't. At that point, it belongs to Superior. So why did nobody have a trolling line out? At any point did I see a trolling line out?
They don't fish. So I fish, and there was coastal brookies floating right underneath me when we went past the Gargantua River and stuff. Well, I'm working on that trip, so I'm not going to fish. I mean, I'm not going to spend my time fishing. But I did, Pauline, I gave her a fishing rod and my gear before the trip because she wanted to try it. So right. Here you go. Took it on my car. And my mistake is I gave her my new rod that I got at Canadian Tire or Walmart. I'm not sure. But it was one of the reels that comes with line.
Right.
And so we all went out to hike up to the falls, but a bunch stayed behind, and she wanted to go and fish. So I gave her my, again, line, and she packed it the entire time. And I come back, and she was like, well, something happened. I went, what happened? She goes, well, all the line's gone. I got a snag and all the line's gone. I went, how did that happen? And I don't buy a rod and reel at the store with the reel still on it or put on it for you because it, I guess it was enough. Not enough. I don't know what happened. I don't know. Maybe she got a big rookie. I don't know. But I do know that the fishing is incredible along there. But the majority of people, the last 2 years, only one even had somewhat interest in fishing. So it wasn't fishing. Me personally, I was kicking myself for not fishing. But
I would have been. I mean, you're filming with one hand, trolling with the other hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
Come on, man.
I'm working on that trip. Well, I mean, I'm enjoying myself for sure, but I'm not going to be fishing while people want, you know, other things.
What, they want to fish? So the logistics of doing this, when you say Oliver and Oscar just worked their buns off, the logistics of breaking camp, packing the boat, teaching everybody how to get that packed properly and into the water, stopping for breaks, stopping and making lunch, stopping and setting up camp, getting the canoe settled for the night, making dinners. Like, the logistics of that for two people is huge.
It's huge. But I, you know, here, really good things to talk about for that. So I got it for years, right? Mm-hmm. And when I took on this job last year, I told David at National Adventure. Oh my God!
Naturally Superior Adventures.
Well, I'm drinking tea for God's sakes.
I'm drinking Japanese whiskey.
Oh really? Oh, yeah. Well, I alone did it. We actually did a wine tour at Prince Edward County with
But you weren't drinking.
I wasn't. I was driving.
No. Now you're drinking tea. You've got no excuses.
No, I'm. It was a long day. But well deserved because I've been away a lot, so we had a normal day today. It was good, but yeah. So they work all the time, but I remember guiding too. You work all the time, but when I took on this job, I went to Oliver last year, and he was there this year. Incredible person, like mm-hmm. Like they're so happy or lucky to have him as the guide there. And I remember going up to him and I said, "Okay, like I won't walk into your kitchen." And that's an old phrase about guides. That meant that I'm an old guide. I've done this before, but I'm not going to tell you what to do and what not to do. So I was the host with the most. I was telling stories, being jolly all the time. But I never went and said, you know, hey, I think you should do this. I think you should do that. I never had to. I should be quite honest, but I never did.
Right.
And they really talked to me about it, but they really enjoyed that part because that's their thing. What's really cool about too is that all the clients said, isn't it interesting how the two guides know the best campsites when we make camp? I went, I don't think they're the best campsites. I think they're the campsites away from us because they've had enough of us during the day.
Yeah, we're just going to go set our tents up way over there.
Oh, man. And the greatest story about Oscar that I can't make my life up. So Oscar, again, was a 19-year-old guy that and he is building up his skills, whatever, to be on these trips. And incredible, right? But we had story night. And then he had a story about he was on a trip with Ian Tamblyn. And I went, well, tell the story. He goes, no, it has to be told around the campfire at night. This is too good of a story. It can't be just told in the boat. Because you're in a canoe, a Voyager canoe, for a long period of time. I'm talking a minimum 4 hours a day.
Right.
Right. Minimum. And you're going at least 19 to 20 kilometers a day. So it's not like a piddle around and enjoy yourself. It was, but so sure enough, the night's the night where he's going to tell the story about being windbound with Ian Tamblyn for 3 nights before Ian Tamblyn is about to perform in Red Rock at a conference or at a concert. And they thought a great idea was to take a Voyager canoe ride with the musicians before that. And then they get windbound. And windbound big time. And so he tells the great story. And then they finally get rescued by some guy with a yacht or whatever boat. And they pull them out. And it's a great story. I did a whiskey chat with Ian Tamblyn about it. And nobody's watching it because it got low ratings, whatever. But you need to listen to the interview. Because I had... Oscar tell his story on the beach, and then I got in because I contacted him. But the funny part of what was, I went, so he's telling the story. I went, that's a great story. I should ask Ian about this poem that he wrote about eating your left ear because he was so hungry. And he did, right? And then Oscar goes, I call BS. You don't know Ian. I went, well, actually, I do know Ian Taylor. No, you don't. You call BS. I don't know who you are, Kevin Kellen, the happy camper, but you don't know Ian Talman. I went, well, actually, I do. He's a good friend of mine, and I'm going to ask about this. He goes, I'll see that. Put up the cards. So I get home, and the first thing I do is I contact Ian. I went, hey, Ian, do you know Oscar? Oh, that son of a bitch. So the interview, the whiskey chai I do with him, is Ian tells the story, his version, which actually is pretty identical to the other to Oscar's. And then he has the poem, and he reads the poem that he talks about eating the left ear. It was freaking awesome. It was like the best interview of my life. And then so I send it to Oscar, and he goes, you son of a bitch. You actually know the guy. Yeah.
I've been saying a lot lately at work, because people go, well, how do you know that person? How do you know that? These are the circles I run in. You know, the people just like, wait a minute. How come you know that person from that company? These are the circles I run in.
It's a very small world, serendipity, especially in the outdoor world, to be quite honest, mm-hmm. actually.
Yeah. So you had a great time doing all that. You didn't see many animals, right? Much wildlife?
We saw incredible wildlife. We didn't see any like moose and caribou, whatever, but we saw a lot of bald eagles. Mm-hmm. But my best moment was a peregrine falcon flying over our head. I thought it was a merlin. And I even said, I think there's a merlin. And then I was like, no. And then we saw another peregrine falcon. So to see two peregrine falcons in one trip, that was incredible.
It's a good sign.
We didn't see, we saw a lot of moose tracks, but no moose, but a lot of warblers. We had one birder in the group that I like because I love birds. And we had a mix of people, too. We didn't have all the same characters. So that was kind of cool. All different reasons to be out there. Like a
good mix.
Like a salad.
Oh. So you did a 6-part series of this trip on your KC Happy Camper channel. So if everybody goes KC Happy Camper on YouTube, you'll see the Quetico one as well, but watch the 6 videos here. Now after you made that long journey home again, you decided you're going to go to Quebec. Now you used to guide in Quebec, La Vérendrye area.
Yeah, years ago, I did, actually, on my own. I wasn't guiding for a company at that time. I guided for camps and stuff, and then I decided to try it on my own, and it was good and bad. I stopped doing that. Actually, the insurance was incredible. If you remember back in the day when in Bruce Peninsula, that boat flipped over, that glass boat flipped over with a bunch of kids in it.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, the insurance for taking people in the water skyrocketed. So I got out of that. But, yeah, I got it for a couple of years in Quebec and loved La Vérendrye. Like, it was a mecca. But I met so many people back then paddling La Vérendrye to get ready for Algonquin. They were training in La Vérendrye. You know, they were from Montreal or for whatever in Quebec. And to go to Algonquin, I went, this is freaking
why
bigger than Algonquin. Like, but it was sort of this dream of them to go to the Petawawa and everything else. And then training, they're doing the Kuskokwim River.
Right.
So they could train to do the Petawawa. I went, there's no difference. But I got to start working in Quebec 3 years ago again, because again, it was like after a while. I even wrote a book, Paddler Guides to Ontario Rivers and Quebec, and I chose 5 rivers in Quebec because that was kind of a tease to sort of say, okay, I would love to write a guidebook in Quebec back in the day.
Right.
But I decided then not to do it because I go, I'm from Ontario. I should not write a book about Quebec canoe routes. Someone will do that. And you don't see a lot. Like, it never really happened.
No.
I mean, Quebec, there's a lot of information you can gather in French, and that's fine. But for anybody else that are not from there, it's not easy. So anyway, so what happened? Sorry, I'm blabbing. But a few years back, Abitibi Temiskaming Tourism said, we saw you at the Toronto show. Can you come to Quebec with your partner and your two dogs? And I said, why? And we'd love you to Paolo Pemikin and Le Kipua. I went, why? I don't speak French. My daughter's fluent in French, whatever. And I kind of, they go, we don't want you to speak French. We want to prove that people from Ontario can go to Quebec and not worry about speaking French. But also you have two dogs. And we changed the rule now in the backcountry, especially La Verende, that you can bring your dog because you weren't allowed to back then. It was an old rule that dogs, you know, run down deer and moose and stuff. So
attract bears.
That was the rule. So they're like, well, we're trying to get rid of that idea from people from Ontario. So we invite you. So we had a lovely time. And then the next year, they asked me back again to, oh, it's a place. It's further north of Kipwa. Abba.
Oh, where you met the bridge, the suspension.
Yeah, yeah. And Aquabelle. And I went there, and it was just me because Christine at the time was dealing with poor Oliver and stuff. And then her dog. And then I went there, and it was incredible because you go through these lowland areas of Timmins and that whole Claybell area, and all of a sudden, these cliffs everywhere, these mountains everywhere, and nobody's there. Like, mm-hmm. I went there in August, and I saw seven other people. It was a massive national park. Well, provincial park. They call them national parks there. It pissed on rain the entire time, but I had a good time. And then they said, well, do you want to come back again and do La Verende? And I went, well, La Verende is not in your region. Well, yeah, half of it is. And I went, okay, I would love to go there because that's where I used to go.
Right.
And to go back to the familiar. And so cool story about that was the ranger, or what do they call them there? But the main superintendent of the park suggested Route 78. And he goes, that's a route that a lot of people don't do. You don't want to see a lot of people. So how about you do that? I went, okay, no problem. And I got to say, it was back to back to back. I'd been to Petawawa, I'd been to Quetico, I'd been to the Spear, and now I got like 4 days off, and then now in Quebec, here we go, venture is afoot. And I get to Grand Lake Victoria to start mm-hmm. this loop. But a couple of days before that, I sent everybody a note saying, you know, can I do whatever I want when I get there? Because I don't know what's going to happen. I got windbound friggin' half my life the last couple of months. So they go, yeah, that's a great thing about La Verende. Like, you don't have to keep, like, the French River or Killarney, you have to be to that specific site now.
Right.
Whereas that's not the case there. Okay, no problem. Thank goodness, because I took a really rough road to get there. That was interesting. And then I get there, and 6 kilometers in, I got windbound. A massive storm hit. Actually, a massive storm hit before. I got to the end of the road, and there was a mini campground that nobody uses, and I stayed there the first night, which is lovely. And then I move on, pissing rain all day, and I get there, and I went, okay, Kevin, why are you trying to do this friggin' loop? Like, why? You're windbound. You can't go anywhere. I'm a 14-foot prospector that's the weight of a potato chip.
Right.
And so the glorious part of the same thing happened in Quetico. Everybody else, that being two families, not a lot of people, they got windbound with me and they stay with me. And I got to interview them and knew more about Quebec than I could ever imagine because they're staying with me.
Right.
Yeah. So I loved it. Went back, I would even do the Route 78, to be quite honest. I would do Lake Victoria. It was a gem beyond belief. Sand beach campsites everywhere. Nobody around.
Well, it says there's like over 4,000 lakes, 800 kilometers of canoe routes. It's only a 4.5-5 hour drive north of Ottawa. So when you're talking about going, I mean, nowadays, if you want to get to Killarney or Temagami, you're doing that anyway. And you're in Kingston, so
that was a big thing for me in Kingston. That's why I'm liking Quebec a lot. Everybody's like, why are you going to Quebec? Well, I live in Kingston, and for me to go there, it's pretty friggin' darn easy. Mm-hmm. When I lived near Peterborough or back in the day in Milton, yeah, it made sense to go to Killarney and stuff like that, but I'm getting to know more regions, and it's really good to know new areas you know nothing about. That's so healthy.
Well, the thing with Quebec, and as you had mentioned about not speaking, I'm doing, you know, I'm doing a big solo trip there. And the first thing out of everybody's mouth, you're going to Quebec. I didn't know you spoke French. Neither did I. I don't. You know, I mean, high school French, you pick up words, you know, little bits of pieces here and there. But yes, there are the militant ones that if you speak English, they will do nothing for you. But tourism, everybody wants the tourism dollar. Everybody needs the tourism dollars. So if it means that they need to speak English to help you out to get your tourism dollars, they're going to help you out.
Yeah, you know, Sean, that didn't happen to me. I understand where you're getting on that. But where I got it from is that they really don't want you to try to speak French, to be quite honest.
Oh, heck no.
They speak better English than I do, okay? So if you are a good person and you communicate with them and want to be in their region with them, because in theory, I met those two families. One was actually from Quebec, but one was from France, which is really funny. That's a funny story. So, but the family from French, the French family, they were speaking English, some didn't. And they were apologizing to me all the time. And I said, could you stop apologizing? Like, I can't speak your language. And they're like, yeah, so sorry. I went, I'm learning so much from you. But they were with me for a long period of time because it was windbound. And I learned more French being with them around the campfire doing marshmallows than ever. And I immersed the culture. Like, the culture is incredible in Quebec. You're talking a six-year-old boy sharpening his friggin' stick with his knife. And I'm looking at them and I'm thinking, I can see a lot of people from Ontario not allowing their kids to do that. Like they're campers. They're really strong campers. And I would say I love the culture, love the people, really love the people, to be quite honest. The only thing I don't get is a friggin' outhouse is made out of friggin' blue barrels with a slot in the lid. So what is that?
You were talking, and it's in your, again, Casey Happy Camper YouTube channel. There's the video of your trip there. And you showed that, it's like one of Andy's Recreational Barrel Works barrels with a hole cut in the top. And you got to sit on that, and it's half buried in the dirt. And then, because you took one of my books that I lent you, and then you're sitting there reading it, and I had to do a double check. Okay, no, that's the tarp over top of them. Because I thought you were videoing yourself on that barrel reading my book. I'm just like, oh, it's his now.
Well, I got to say, I was thinking about doing that as a joke. I never used that barrel. I
couldn't.
No, I did a cat scratch in the backwoods.
Yeah, I would be too afraid of that thing just...
It's just not that. Well, I get it. You have to squat on it. You couldn't sit. I wouldn't sit on
it. No.
You imagine, if you're just listening, imagine this. It's a blue barrel with a lid on it, and then in a rectangular slot down the middle, and sitting on that, really? And then, so yeah, squatting on it, that's fine. There's a lot of cultures, they don't sit on anything. They just squat over everything, right? So that's fine. I'm just not doing it.
It's bad enough most people can't hit the big circle part. Now you're asking them to hit this little target like that. That's not happening. I'm going over to the tree. You got to watch the video to check that out. But, so Grand Lac Victoria, they were talking about the fishing. And this one threw me. Brook trout, lake trout, pike sturgeon, smallmouth bass, and yellow gold.
I don't know what a yellow gold is.
Is it a walleye or a pickerel?
Oh, no, they call them a dory
something, yeah.
Dory, yeah. Not pickerel, walleye. So it's totally different, too.
So well, they have it in, like when you Google it, they have it as a walleye.
Is a walleye.
For the non-French people.
Yeah, no, it is a walleye. So at the end of the day... Oh, people are going to disagree with me. I don't care at this point. I'll give you the logistics behind it. I get why you call it a pickerel if you live in northwestern Ontario. It's always been a pickerel. Or North Bay. It's always been a pickerel. It is not. A pickerel is in the pike family, and it comes from Lake St. Clair, Lake Erie area, and it's an extirpated species. A walleye is a walleye, and they're called walleye because they're large eyes, because they're nocturnal. And the Americans call them walleye, so a lot of the Northerners would say, well, they're wrong because they're American. And the debate goes on and on and on and on. And you, if you go to Quebec, they actually do call them walleye. In fact, I never heard the word pickerel at all. I heard the other term that you're talking about. But when I taught fish and wildlife for 35 years at the college, and I'd have to go in the class and go over species that day, I would say, sorry, if you want to be graduate from this class, you call them walleye. They're not pickerel. And I'd get some Northerners, oh, my dad's going to kill you. I went, I don't care. But the textbook says the pickerel is not proper.
I so just call them dinner.
But here's the end of the day. Do you really care? Because when I go up north in northwest Ontario fishing, I'm going to call them a pickerel because I don't want to get beat up.
Right. So let's just throw this. Is it a pike or a jackfish?
Jackfish are different than pike. Jackfish is a different subspecies. So
is it? There's because out west, we always knew them as jack. And then we moved out here, just to sort of get off topic of everything here, we moved out to Ontario, and everybody, well, that's a jack. No, that's a pike.
Yeah, but you also got green pike. You've got a whole bunch of different species. It's like warblers, for heaven's sakes. Okay, when I worked at the School of Natural Resources and I had to go get species from the tech, I could not use the common name. I had to use the scientific name or he wouldn't not give me the species for that reason you're talking about.
Right.
Nobody would get misunderstood of the species.
There's pike, there's green pike, there's gar pike.
Gar pike, yeah, totally different. Yeah.
And then we got jack. Apparently, you don't know Jack.
And then Diane. And then Diane as well. There's always Jack and Diane.
Jack and Diane. Yeah. you don't know Jack. We can go on for hours. The only thing I know, you can get a decent price fishing license for a couple of bucks if you're going for a few days. But if you're going for a few weeks, it gets a bit pricey. But
really have to watch that in Quebec. I don't know why the reason it is. Maybe because you're not from the province, whatever. I'm not sure if there's any political thing going on there. I don't really care. But I do know you have to watch it. So if you're from Ontario or out of province of Quebec, you can get a 3-day, 5-day, 7-day, or yearly pass. I would not get the 5-day. It's way too expensive. I would do the 3. Even if you're doing a 7-day trip, it's cheaper to do the 3. And I should have wrote this down, but I think it cost me $55 for the 3. But also you need, and this is really important, because Lizek operate most of the north, and they don't get canoeists. They don't understand canoeists. La Verende also was made basically for anglers and hunters,
right?
Not for canoeists. Traditionally. And so they don't get the idea they would move from lake to lake. So I remember in the old days when I got it, you would have to pay per lake to fish on. And they would look at you like, well, why are you moving on from lake to lake? Well, I'm a canoeist. Why would you do that? So you would have to pay per lake to fish, which would cost you an insane amount. It would make no sense to do that. So I just never fished. But and that might be the same place in other places in Quebec. I don't know. I'm not an expert on that. But I do know what I had to do to fish when I went for my week in Quebec. I had to go to the main – well, you can do it online. But I went to the main office of not La Verende, but – well, I did. La Verende, but the south border or the north border. You go into the office and you say, okay – here's my permit. I've already got my permit online. So you have a permit. Okay. And I'd like a provincial license. Well, how many days? So I paid that. Then to go into La Verende, and you go to canoe camping, area, and they show them the permit. They give you the maps of where you're going, and then you had to pay another fee to fish in La Verende. And they wanted to know where you were fishing, so what region you're in, because there are two regions. So in Abitibi-Témiscouin, it was actually a smaller size you can keep as opposed to the other one.
Right.
But in the lake I was going to, or no, not the lake, the region I was going into, it was, I'm probably wrong with this, but 32 centimeters between 37 to 52, yeah. Yeah, you can keep. So what that means is if it was smaller than that, you had to let it go. And if it was bigger than that, you had to let it go. So everybody goes, well, why? Well, it was a fisheries management thing. It's not like they're trying to rip you off. They're basically saying so many people are fishing here for walleye, and we want to keep the population up, that the bigger ones are the big spawners. We want to keep them. And the smaller ones are the juveniles, and we want to keep them because they're going to become the next feed.
The bigger ones.
Yeah, yeah. So it makes sense. And we do that in the Carthers. We do that in Ontario. So it's not a Quebec
slot size.
Yeah, but you need to really know what you're doing with all that because, you know, you need all the paperwork. And I'm thinking, well, who's going to catch me? Yep, there's wardens out there.
So, not where I'm going.
Oh, man. And I got to tell you, there's no way I was going to be an Ontario person going to Quebec without the proper...
Right?
Stuff, right? I mean, it's like anybody. If you know, you're the outsider, you want to make sure you're doing proper. But all the things they're doing is proper for a reason, because I worked in that field. Like, there was a reason why, because there's so many people wanting to catch fish.
Yeah, so big time.
Yeah, and I got windbound, so I couldn't go fishing again, except I did fish from shore, and I did catch one walleye, and it was too small, so I let it go. And
Wait, so- I've seen the video. Did you let it go, or did it escape?
Well, I did a Kevin move.
No, I think it kicked your butt and took off.
It slapped me in the face with its tail. It's called a peduncle.
And gone.
Yeah, I got slapped with a caudal peduncle in the head.
Something important to talk about. First, I'll say something. You had a Helly Hansen rain jacket you did a little bit of a review on. And I like the fact that you're honest about the review in it, because a lot of people get the big name stuff. Well, I got to make sure I say this is the best rain jacket ever, but you gave an honest review of that jacket. So watch the video so you can see Kevin talking about Helly Hansen.
You know, it's funny being windbound, because I did all that because I was kind of bored. I'm thinking, well, I got to film something. So I looked at all the gear I had. And actually, it's funny. I never thought of that until you say that. I did give it an honest review because it was very thin material.
Oops.
I was giving honest. Like, if you ever listen to my reviews, they're all honest. Like, well, for two reasons. One is I write for Explorer Magazine. So there's rules when I review for Explorer Magazine. You have to give an honest one. And if you like the gear, then, yeah, you can actually not keep it, but you can, you know, pay for it, whatever. Or not. But nobody's on your case to say you need to actually say this is a good product. And actually, the companies that I finally, you know, answer back, they know that. A lot of the companies I don't answer back. They you know, I don't answer back for a lot of reasons. But the Helly Hansen, well, Helly Hansen's a good jacket. You can't knock Helly Hansen. My problem with the jacket at first was it was so thin that I didn't wear it in the early spring because I was like, this is way too thin. And it was a heat wave and a rainstorm. That jacket makes complete sense in the region you are.
Right.
But I did bring my heavy jacket in case. I got to say, the one jacket I've been using a lot this year, I think I'm the only one who bought it. But so Explorer Happy Camper did that merch thing for Camp Outlook. And we did a pullover. It's a windbreaker. It's not waterproof. It's a kangaroo jacket. I love that type of jacket. And I think I was the only one that bought it when the merch came out. That thing is dirty as hell. I've worn that all over the place. And in fact, I think it has whiskey and urine on it as well.
Probably. A few other things.
But the other two is those sandals, the Keen sandals that I got a couple years ago. So Keen sent me those, and I loved them. I just loved them. And they said, could you stop showing them because they're yellow, and nobody bought the yellow except you. So could you... No, I love the yellow. I don't
matches your jacket. Now, if you got a yellow Kokatat life jacket and maybe some yellowy orange pants, you'd have a fantastic ensemble.
Well, it's crazy. Well, and even the palette, I didn't mention the palette yet because I'm using it all season. It's a promo, but Badger gave me a Spanish cedar paddle that it's lighter than sassafras. Okay. So they're not selling it yet. Mike said, can you try this for the season and let me know? And I have been. It's the lightest paddle ever, but maybe too light? Like, have you ever had a paddle too light? Like,
you know who could answer that question? Cliff Jacobson.
Oh, stop it. Don't.
I think you, if you put that baby up against a carbon fiber.
You just leave that man alone.
I'll never forget that conversation we had. You've got video of that too.
I do.
Now, really? I like the heavier paddles. Well, that's because you don't know better. What?
I miss my time with Cliff. Yeah. I hope things get all settled so we go back to those shows with everybody. It's like, it was so great because Cliff was Cliff. Yeah, this is the way it is. And then him and I would go at it. Okay, let's have a whiskey.
Let's have a whiskey. So the other thing is, what was the whiskey situation like in Quebec? The spillage, shall we say.
Let's just say that, you know, it's really interesting too. I never thought about it until now. So I finally brought an Nalgene bottle for my whiskey.
As the audience does a slow clap.
And you know what? I didn't spill any of it at all. In fact, if I remember it, but I also didn't drink much of it because I don't know. I was with a bunch of families being windbound, reading books. There's no, and not catching any fish, whatever, but I still don't understand it. Like, to bring an Nalgene bottle, it makes sense, but then you got to bring the Nalgene bottle back out.
And what you do is you filter water and put it in that, and then when you get home, you put that in the fridge, and then you can sip that water to wean yourself back into reality. That's my theory. I'm sticking with it.
No, it's true. I thought the other day, I was writing some stuff down in my journal about water. So I was out for like a good amount of days. What was the best water? All those trips. And it was Lake Superior.
Yeah.
It was so cold. Oh, it was so cold. You got a thing of water and filter it out. And man, and it was hot and humid. But also Lake Superior, every night I wore a wool toque at night. It was so cool. Quebec wasn't too bad. There was a forest fire north of me, but then they're really good. They informed me, no, it's out. You're good. The Quetico is just like, I got out of there just in time. I was so lucky. I do remember driving home, back along the Lake Huron coast, mm-hmm. and the highway was so full of smoke that the traffic was clogged up. So yeah.
Yeah, it's I'm heading to central, I guess, Quebec for a trip for just over 2 weeks, a solo trip. And I put a post that I've upgraded my Spot unit to the one with the messaging service. This is Spot X. I've had a Spot since like 2006, the original big brick when they first came out. And then I went from that to a Gen 4. I missed a couple in between, whatever. And now I've got the Spot X simply for the fact of I know there's been wildfires in the area I'm going. Derek loves following that. So I'm going to send him a test message. And I told him, don't you message me unless you happen to see, oh, there's a forest fire in your vicinity. And then you can text me. And then because I'm one of those people that I don't want technology out there. I bring my phone if I need a quick picture or the journaling function. There will be no cell phone service there. I'm not bringing any other stuff like that. But like I say, I use it for the tracking so people at home can follow my map that I leave saying, yep, he's on track and that sort of stuff. But because I'm doing a longer solo trip where there are potential for forest fires, I've upgraded. And then, if there's something happening, at least you're aware right? Because I think it's going to become, and we did a show there a few weeks back about, you know, wildfires are sort of a new norm, it seems now, especially Northern Ontario and stuff like that. We have to start being prepared for it. So having to be rescued, you know, evacuated, that sort of stuff is not something you want to happen.
No, I'm glad we have the technology we have today. A lot of people say, well, back in the day, well, I wish I had that back in the day, too. I'm looking at some new stuff, too. I know this early spring in Algonquin, Christine's son's phone went off, tornado warning, because he had Rogers.
Right. Yeah, and I was that, there.
Yeah. Yeah. You were on that trip,
right? It's been a long summer, hasn't it?
Yes.
That was way back in May.
We become wilderness hermits.
I don't know who's who anymore. Yeah. You get that all of a sudden there. If you're with Roger, boom, he's got that tornado warnings, and everybody else is looking at their telephones going, apparently my phone company don't care about me.
Yeah, I know.
They know I got a work phone.
Yeah, I really do hope things change.
Yeah.
I think it will. I mean, Bell will obviously will come up with something for sure. So, but I do know that the superintendents of the parks, in my travels, I've been visiting a lot of people I know just to visit. I've been doing a lot of things, too, that I don't document and film and talk about just because – you know, I just like visiting people good friends with. And they're all saying it is changing, Kevin, especially on Ontario parks. Like, we're sick and tired of rescuing people that should not be rescued. We don't know what to do about it. The people not wearing their PFDs, should OPP actually make it legal or not? Is that coming up or not? And those are decisions that I'm pretty sure.
Don't even start that on social media because... Oh, you'll end up having to turn comments off.
Yeah.
It's bad.
Yeah. And I even get to the point, too, where I came home, too, and Explore Magazine said, okay, well, how about less destination pieces and more poke the bear, Kevin? We like your poking the bear. I went, I can't poke the bear every freaking week. I've written for Explore every week for, I don't know, more than a couple of decades, and I will do that now and then, but Ontario Parks is going to hate me if I keep poking the bear, right?
So,
because they're not all bad things going on. But that beer in the beach thing was really interesting. That nobody ever understood what I was trying to get at during that interview. I could care less about you if you're having a beer on the beach. It's called the Yeti Walkabout. Everybody has a beer in there. But it was the attention they were given to having a beer on the beach with brewery people on stage with the minister. And on CBC, I was talking, and I had to talk to the beer brewery people on how great this was. And I'm thinking, yeah, but how much money and time are you spent to protect more wilderness? And it just went over everybody's head.
Well,
and they're all in Tevin's you don't, what's wrong with the beer? I went, I said 10,000 times I could care less about if you had a beer on the beach. You don't get.
You're spending more money convincing us we should have the beer than you're actually spending.
Yeah.
But you know what? And you bring up the point about the Yeti Walkabout. Yeah. Okay. I've got a beer in my Yeti to hide it, but I'm not just dropping that Yeti in the bush and going and getting another Yeti.
Yeah.
Where you're going to start finding all the beer cans everywhere. And that's the big thing for one of the big things for me.
Yeah. But even that, I mean, that's going to happen anyways in the backcountry. But it's the top person that's in control of our protected area standing on stage talking about beer, how important it is, and breweries, how it's going to help the local economy. That's scary as shit.
Well, the buck appears.
Sorry, I'm blabbing. Don't get me going.
No, let's get you going. Let's poke that bear. But I mean, I fully understand what you're saying. It's just like, why is selling beer more important than everything else that's going on?
And I don't care if Ontario Park sells beer in their stores and stuff, because yeah, there's all around the country, around the world, actually, mm-hmm. we're not progressing towards all that. That's fantastic. I really don't care. But if you don't get what's going on about the importance, and I would like to, at the end, I'm going to write a piece about this and be on CBC about this. I'd like to see and ask everybody out there, all the things that Ontario Parks was supposed to do this year, what's the goods and bads? There's some goods. I mean, the one great thing I just heard, and in fact, talked to the superintendent on my travels, was Bonneco is extending their season until the end of December. So you can do hot tenting there.
Excellent.
Yeah, and not many people know about that. I might think, well, people should know that. That's really cool. Or the amount of park staff busting their butts off out there. And the new Let's Meet the Park Staff program on social media.
Right.
I never thought that would happen, but they're doing that and doing national programs on social media. That's really cool. But yeah, it's beer on the beach.
Let's just chit-chat a little minute here about the old chestnut of how dry Ontario Park's wood is.
I love that. I love that video that someone did. Who was it? It's on social media. The guy goes to get water. He's really thirsty. He's like dehydrated, really thirsty. Can't find water. He buys a chunk of park wood and then squeezes it to get water out of it.
Well, everybody knows the trick that if you are on the Highway 60 corridor in Algonquin Park, and winter camping especially, and you want dry wood, behind the drugstore, there's an old fella that sells dry firewood. Unfortunately, it sounds like he is no longer selling the dry firewood. So this year you are stuck with drinking wood.
And I've had park people come up to me and say, please stop talking about how bad our wood is, Kevin. Nobody knows how to light a fire. And I went, guys, really? Really?
You need to listen. Au contraire, mon frère.
At the end of the day, it's like you need to listen to the people that are paying for their stay there, like the clients. As a business person, like, you need to understand the client is saying, no, this is crap. If you keep denying it, sounds like, oh my God, I'm getting to be like, get off my lawn guy. But
there is nothing like that. Every generation needs one or two or 10.
Oh no. I never want to be that. But, the Quebec parks, Pemmican National Park, which is a provincial park, absolutely clean bathrooms, absolutely fantastic wood, absolutely incredible staff. But yet nobody goes there because it's across the border.
Right.
I actually said border, but
it's across the border. Which one?
But for Ontario people, if you want to go to a really nice campground, go to Pemmican. It's full of old growth pine, really nice place. And maybe when we do that, maybe things will change in Ontario. Maybe they'll say, because really, maybe that top administrators aren't doing anything because Ontario Parks is so packed, people can't get in. It's like going to a hotel. Why fix it if we're full?
Right? I don't know.
You got me going, man, and I'm drinking tea. Well, actually, I'm having a wee bit of whiskey now because you got me all agitated.
That's okay. Everybody has a generation of get the off my lawn. Kevin, you're our man. I don't care if you don't want to be. You are. You are now. No, you have elect all those in favor. I've just raised my hand. All right, carried.
No, it's like people going on about the youth today, about the YouTubers and stuff like that. I'm 100% behind them. I'm not going to be get off my lawn. I have so many. So we'll end this because it's going to be a long interview. So in a couple of weeks, there's going to be a piece that I wrote for Explore Magazine, and it's called "The Happy Camper, the Commenter of the Canoe World." And read that piece, and you're going to see things.
The commoner?
The commoner of the canoe world. I'm not going to give you any details because I'm going to give it away. But what happened, I was on a podcast, actually on, what's his name, a Backroads Bill.
And was it the Echo?
Yeah. And what happened was I just got off trip and I was exhausted. Like I was like, oh yeah, I gotta, okay, here we go. And then he asked questions I haven't heard before. And we started talking about common coon world. And I went, yeah, I never really told people about that story. So I wrote it up and it's going to be out in Explorer, my sort of blog, soon. And that is Poke the Bear.
All right.
I'm talking poke with a stick.
A sharp stick.
Yeah.
It's needed, maybe.
It is needed right now.
See?
Yeah.
Viva la revolution. That's all I'm saying. Kevin Callan, leader of the revolution, baby.
No.
Don't tell Christine.
No, she actually inspired it, to be quite honest.
Oh, it's her fault. Is that what you're saying? Is that what you're saying, Kevin? It's her fault?
Yes, it's her fault. I did write the piece, and then I read it out to her, and she goes, ooh, are you sure?
You know what? Sometimes it just needs to be said. And then let the people get angry about it and let them stew with it and then see where it lays after a little while, right?
When you read the piece, you'll get it, to be quite honest. There's a lot of stuff going on right now in the canoe world, and someone needs to say, hey, whoa.
In the meantime, I'm just going to go up my merry little way doing this, that, and the other thing. Enjoying myself, doing longer solo trips, and I don't care how many people say, oh, can I come along? No. No, it's a solo trip.
I think it should be
me,
a solo
myself,
trip.
And I.
Yeah, well, you should, though, because you drink Tang and...
Tequila and Tang.
You should go by yourself.
I think I'm going to go make one of those right now. Should have been having one of those as we go.
Oh, my Lord. Well, so, cheers, sir.
I'm cheers going on to you, too. No, we're not. We're only an hour and a half. You had good trips. You've had a good summer. One last question. Do you have anything else coming up for the rest of the late summer, fall?
Yeah, I do, actually. It's been a really busy season for me for good reason. One is because I don't teach anymore, so I don't make the – well, I made $32,000 a year at the college. It wasn't a lot of money. But I made the money and I knew I got it. So when I left there over a year ago, kind of panic at first. So I was taking on different jobs, weird jobs. But I'm fine. But nonstop for getting out there. I am going to spend a lot of time. Christine and I are going to do some adventures together. Actually, one is really cool. Chris from Novacraft, he has a square stern canoe with electric motor on it.
Right.
I saw that at his shop, and I went, we should do a trip with that. And he goes, why would you do that?
Oh, you're going to be
that guy. Well, yeah, but that's interesting. That'd be
fun. It's something different, because we just talked a couple weeks back about the Sharp kayak. It looks like a cross between an Oru kayak and a Cybertruck. They're not doing mass productions. Dude's going to do a couple for people that want it. But it's aluminum sheet metal, all folded and stuff. And you'd swear it looks like a Cybertruck, but it's a kayak. Right? So all these new weird things to try out. And when we were up in Moosonee, there was people there with small engines on the back of a square stern canoe. Go for it. Enjoy it.
Yeah, well, you look at Crotch Lake, this is where I think we're going, is up by the North Frontenac. I don't want to be in a motorboat. Well, I could be in a motorboat. I could care less about being in a motorboat. But it's a big lake, and I saw this thing. I went, well, let's go out in that and go fishing. And I said, number one is I want to fish because I've been windbound all freaking season. I can't fish. So we're doing that. And I'm also going to St. Lawrence Parkway.
Mm-hmm.
With Christine, and we're car camping, which,
yeah, fun.
It is. Oh, yeah, okay.
You know what? You get into that outdoors, and there's people around, stuff, and then when you go, your next trip is interior. It makes it that much sweeter. That's my theory.
You've helped me now through my ordeal.
All right. I'm there for you, buddy. I'm there for you. Right. Christine, he needs a hug.
No, we're doing some of that stuff, and also doing normal things around here. I actually really do love living around Kingston area. I mean, not that I didn't like where I lived before, but It's a very beautiful area, and I don't know anything about it, and I love that. So I love going to different places.
You get to explore. So do that.
And, yeah, and then Andy and I will be doing some trip somewhere. I don't know. He's busy doing other stuff, and I'm doing busy other stuff. And so eventually him and I will get together and do something. I am doing a lot more talks in the fall than I usually do, so right. I'll post that on my social media. I'm doing a fall tour to Bruce Peninsula area, to Sarnia area, to Bon Echo, to a whole bunch of outdoor ed centers to get them going because of that whole thing happened in the Toronto outdoor ed world that right. fell apart. So I'm trying to help them with that. I'm going to help out with Camp Outlook again too when they finish off. So yeah, a lot of stuff going on. Yeah.
And, so all this merch that you've been selling with the Happy Camper stuff is for Camp Outlook?
Yeah, so Camp Outlook. So here's a good thing. I shouldn't even say this, but this is funny as hell. So I did all this merch, like nice t-shirts, really incredible sayings that we really thought over and did well, tote bags and stuff. But the whiskey glass... The sale of that whiskey glass got 10 kids that could never go on a canoe trip for whatever reasons on a 10-day trip in Algonquin, the first part of the season with the leaders. So, and I met with them, and they're like, oh, this is really, well, yeah, we got a good trip. I went, well, so what was the best seller, and how did you get the money? The whiskey glass. I went, okay, they're at risk individuals. And we got them out in the woods with a whiskey glass. That's wrong, but it's all right.
Say it's ironic without saying it's ironic. Well, you know what? Regardless of what the sold product was, they got out there, and I presume they had a good time. So that's what matters at the end of the day.
Yeah, I met them, met the leaders. Phenomenal. Like, if you want just a boost in life, just meet youth people. Youth people. Oh my God! See, I went from whiskey to. I went from tea to whiskey. if you want a boost in life, just talk to young people that have a passion.
Yep.
And make a change and love the outdoors for the reason of just they are who they are out there. There's no facade, yep. And that's why they love it so much.
So. We chat back and forth about my daughter that's over in Japan and, got all friends out. She's got this little core group of friends and I mean, she grew up, we'd go camping, we go canoeing and all that sort of stuff. And she got them to go out canoeing for a day and they bought her a stand-up paddle board for her birthday. So they were all going out paddling. One of her other friends said, like, I'm just having way too much fun. She bought a stand-up paddleboard. One of the other guys that are there, his girlfriend went tooling around, came back. So when are we buying paddleboards? And now they are camping as well. She's getting them all into all this outdoor stuff. And they're all having a blast doing it. So, yeah, you get them out there. If you build it, they will come.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
All it takes is one person.
My daughter got all her friends out on a camping trip, and then she's all geared up and all excited. And
it makes a big difference, especially with the youth. Like, and I mean, I grew up Moosonee, North Bay, Petawawa, Yorkton, Saskatchewan, Cold Lake, Alberta, which, you know, we're at the Rockies all the time and stuff like that. So I grew up outdoors. As we like to say, we're the last of the be in when the streetlights come on generation. And then when my dad retired to the Toronto area and I started meeting people at school the next year, it's just like, so you've been up north? Oh, yeah, I've been up north. Where have you been? Barrie. That is not up north. So you start getting people into all of the going up north and stuff, and then it's like they can't get enough. So you can start getting those youth up there, and then when they become adults, they start getting their kids up there. And as they become adults, and their friends is what I'm seeing right now, they start getting their friends, dragging them along. It's just dominoes, right? And that's what we can hope for. It's all we can hope for.
Yeah, yeah. It will all happen. We're good.
As long as it doesn't cost me money, I'm good.
Yeah. Don't worry. There's no forest fires or strong storms happening. We're good.
We're good. No, that light. No, somebody's just flicking a light switch off and on. I know it looks like lightning, but it's not. That's just Sasquatch bowling. No thunder here. So one last thing before we go here, the KC Happy Camper YouTube channel. All your videos are there for these trips we've been talking about, plus a whole lot more. Explore.ca is the website. Go to Explore Magazine, and you have your, is it monthly or weekly?
No, weekly.
I've written a weekly
blog for like a pretty...
I just know they appear in my social media stuff, and I read them. I don't keep track.
I really don't know how I've done that, to be quite honest. But I enjoy it, but I've really written a blog every week for close to 3 decades.
Wow. I've done a podcast once a week for 10 years.
Actually, then you know what it's like, actually.
I know exactly what it's like, my friend. It's a lot of fun. It's all passion. Well, thanks for coming on here, Kevin. And, Derek's out lollygagging around the universe and, coming on here, chatting a bit. I know people like to hear you. They don't necessarily like to see your face, but, they say that about me too. cheers to you, my friend. Thank you for coming on.
Hey.
And I'll be actually seeing you on the weekend.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You're coming here to...
To visit. Yeah, turn the lights off. Act like we're not home. He'll keep knocking and then go away.
you'll be my excuse to get away from the birthday party from all the kids running around.
See?
I got to look at the time. I got to go.
Yeah, get a pinata. It works wonders. Kids love a pinata.
We've already got a jumping gym or whatever it's called.
Oh, yeah.
Castle.
A jumping castle. Gym. Oh, yeah. And then feed them chocolate and all that candy that's in the pinata and then send them all home with their parents. They'll love you for it. Trust me. Trust me, buddy. I'm there for you. All right. Well, thanks, Kevin, for coming on, and we'll be chatting at you pretty soon.
Okay. And thanks, Derek, for joining us.
Yeah. Thanks, Derek. Thanks. What? Yeah. He says thanks back. Wherever he may be.
He portaged half the time and then wimp out.
Oh, he portages half the time. This coming from the guy who only paddles half the time. Oh, I've been in a canoe with you, and I've seen the videos of you in Big Voyager canoes paddling half the time.
Yeah, ooh. Okay. You're right. I feel...
Pot calling the kettle black indeed.
Okay. Half a man.
Alrighty, Kevin, we'll be chatting at you. In the meantime, if you want to find out more about us, you can find us at paddlingadventuresradio.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, and you can download or stream all our episodes on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music, Player FM, and all your favorite podcast downloading sites. Or just go to the episode page at paddlingadventuresradio.com and you can stream or download all our episodes there. If you enjoy the podcast, please share it with your friends, family, and fellow paddlers. Again, big thank you for Kevin Callan for joining us this week. I'm Sean Rowley. We'll see you next time.